Welcome one and all to another day here at The Damage Report. I'm John Arola, and joining us for a rundown that is jammed packed with legal tomfoolery, we decided to get someone who knows a little thing about the law, AB Birds Tucker. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Very excited to have you here. Very excited to get your thoughts. When we're debating generally on the show, like the tradition on The Damage Report is when we're discussing legal matters, we talk about it with very little information. We don't know what we're talking about, okay? And so we probably reached the wrong conclusions. I decided to briefly change that up. So we decided to bring you on.
Hopefully I know what I'm talking about.
Hopefully, we'll see, we'll see. But anyway, we do have a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of this first hour. Not only the latest updates, the continued evolution of this fight over whether Donald Trump should be placed under some sort of protective order as the January 6th case rolls on. Somehow, Dark Brandon has been roped into this debate, and we're gonna talk about it a little bit later. We've got some updates from the office of Steven Crowder. Things not looking great for that show, which is a shame. You hate to see it happen over there. But anyway, we'll have that for you and a whole lot more besides. We're gonna be talking about guns for kids. We're gonna be talking about student debt cancellation and whether it's acceptable to unmask members of hate groups. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on. And that's all in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, we've got some fake fury for you having to do with razors. Can you actually take AP Psych in Florida? It turns out that it really depends. Every hour it flips back and forth. They'll have it, they won't have it. They'll have it, but it won't be what you think. We're gonna be trying to catch up on that and a whole lot more besides. So in advance of all of that, please hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live and they can come join us, join in on the conversation. And in respect to that conversation, if you wanna send us comments, tweets, super chats, we'll respond during our social breaks and you just might earn yourself a $100 Blue Apron gift card with a particularly insightful or perhaps clever comment. So get those in. And with all that said, AB, are you ready to do this thing?
I'm so ready.
Okay. Let's do it together.
Yeah.
We were hoping that by today we would know if Donald Trump and his team are gonna be placed under some sort of protective order to stop him from opining wildly about the January 6th case, leaking evidence, intimidating witnesses, but we're not quite to an answer just yet. But we do have the latest updates. And from Trump, we have to, of course, give his perspective. So he bleated. Let's see, my political capital opponent, Crooked Joe Biden, tells Merrick Garland and the DOJ to indict and arrest me on bogus charges and accusations. Supposedly Joe Biden was not involved in this, that's what he says. Believe it if you want to or not, whatever. Trying desperately to steal the election, but that wasn't enough. He now wants thug prosecutor, deranged Jack Smith, to file for a court order taking away my First Amendment rights, speech. He doesn't want him to do that, it's already happened. So based on yet another radical left hoax, I'll be the only politician in American history not allowed to speak. The never-ending witch hunt continues, MAGA. So I'm not an expert on protective orders or whatever, but it is not my understanding that you are literally like cursed with the inability to speak. This is not like a Little Mermaid type situation. You're still able to talk, you're just not allowed to talk about incredibly sensitive details of the case, AB. It's something more like that, right?
Yeah, it's closer to that. So essentially, what you don't want is for anyone in a specifically a criminal matter to be able to put out information maybe about witnesses, right? Or sometimes you have evidence that may not necessarily be admissible in court, but it could be sensitive to the situation. And so you don't want that out in the public, especially if you're trying the case in the public, because that could taint your jury, especially if you don't have one yet. So it's more so like, we don't want you, like you've been calling out people's names, right? Talking about people, calling people names all in the media. You don't want that from your potential witnesses. And likely your unindicted co-conspirators at this point, right? You don't want certain information out. So that, you know, is likely what the prosecutor is trying to protect right now.
And honestly, like they're not super rare, right? Protective orders happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're very common. Normally it's just like a blanket, like it's already kind of known, but obviously these circumstances are different, but it's a blanket thing, like it happens all the time.
Yeah, and you mentioned the circumstances are different. Some of the ways that they're different is that Donald Trump has a history of trying to intimidate witnesses, both in public and in private. He has a history of threatening the prosecutors, as well as the judges, as well as their families in cases he's been involved in. He has a history just like a week ago of saying, if you come after me, I'm coming after you. Like, he is giving them every excuse to do this protective order. So I don't know, like, I know that the dude loves to speak, but what I see his bleat being about is less about actually being worried about whether he can, like, you know, leak details. I'm sure he'd like to be able to do that. It's more he is using this opportunistically to pretend that a wider form of speech is being curtailed, because he thinks his legal strategy should be, they're trying to make it so I can't run for president. Of course, this would have nothing to do with any of that. And as a legal strategy, that doesn't have anything to do with what the case is going to be about. But for PR purposes, it feels like that's what the messaging is about. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I think it's kind of dangerous when you're someone who's running for president doesn't even understand the basic fundamentals of the Constitution, right? What free speech is. And I mean, even he must not have read the indictment either, right? Because, like, the first paragraph of the indictment says, you have the free speech to say X, Y, and Z. Yep. I'm not prosecuting you for your speech, I'm prosecuting you for your actions. And while granted, there are some actions that can be related to speech, those actions aren't being tried, right? So it's just like, poor Trump, mm-hmm. but like, you don't even understand what free speech is. So I would assume you don't know how to use it, which is why you feel like, you know, you're not allowed to say what you want to say. But what more can you say? You're already in trouble.
Yeah, 100%. And we don't have much expectation for what more he can say. We would assume that his lawyers would have a more nuanced understanding of the law, and perhaps they do. But what they're saying in trying to continue to push for this, because they met on Monday, and in theory now they're going to be meeting again later on today. There could be a hearing by Friday to finally decide it. But here is what they're saying, the Trump lawyers. In a trial about First Amendment rights, the government seeks to restrict First Amendment rights. Again, the trial is not about First Amendment rights. I know that you want it to be. Oh boy, do you want it to be. But that's not what it's about. And a protective order is not about restricting First Amendment rights. It's about protecting the judicial process, but whatever. Worse, it does so against its administration's primary political opponent during an election season in which the administration, prominent party members, and media allies have campaigned on the indictment and proliferated its false allegations. Look, so yes, it is going against the administration's primary political opponent, but you know, the administration's primary political opponent tried to overthrow the government. That's not totally on Joe Biden. Anyway, the Jack Smith team, they fired back, accusing the former president of trying to, quote, try the case in the media rather than in the courtroom, is basically what I was alluding to earlier. Prosecutor Thomas Windham blasted a Trump attorney for appearing on, quote, 5 television programs on Sunday to discuss the case in detail. So yeah, that is what is happening. They're going and trying to set up not what the actual case will be about, but about what everyone who is either supportive of or maybe amenable to the message of Donald Trump will interpret the case, the lens they'll interpret it through. They will be convinced that it's about the First Amendment by the time this thing finally starts, even though that has very little to do with it. So anyway, I'm just curious from your point of view, with your experience, if they have this hearing Friday, if we get a decision perhaps by early next week, do you think that the protective order will actually be put into place?
So I think it depends on what they're trying to protect, right? So if it's something outside of information we already know, right? Because a lot of the evidence allegedly and a lot of what's in the indictment came from like the January 6th committee hearings, right? And from you know, other procedures that have occurred. So we were kind of familiar with that. But if there's information in there that could be crucial to the case and essentially could taint witnesses and quite frankly taint a jury one way or the other, I do think that a protective order would be put in place. So I would assume it might be modified slightly, because if I'm a prosecutor, I'm gonna shoot for everything, right? Especially in a case like this. But I would assume that there'll probably be like a happy medium in between to ensure that Trump's First Amendment rights are not being suppressed at this point, but also to secure due process in the court.
Yeah, no, I think that seems reasonable. Yeah, like I know that obviously I've been pretty, you know, mocking towards Trump and all this. I don't have a massive vested interest, partially because I believe that while you can do whatever you want on social media to stop him from intimidating witnesses, there's gonna be a lot of intimidation of the witnesses. And it doesn't even all have to come from Trump. Millions of Americans are gonna be like threatening to murder these people. So anyway, I'm perfectly willing to just wait and see what happens with the judge. Today, the court has an interesting question to debate, and it has to do with a particular legal strategy of Donald Trump's team of lawyers. They're saying this in trying to ward off the protective order. President Biden has likewise capitalized on the indictment, posting a thinly veiled reference to his administration's prosecution of President Trump just hours before the arraignment. They're basically saying, you can't say that Trump doesn't get to talk about the case when his opponent is talking about the case. It's only fair that they both get to do it. So that's the allegation. We need to actually weigh the evidence. So here is the post that they're referencing there.
I like my coffee dark.
That is, of course, Joe Biden drinking his coffee with his dark Brandon coffee mug. And here's the text of that tweet. It says, a cup of Joe never tasted better. Grab yours, blah, 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 dark roast. That's kind of funny, actually. Basically, they've rolled out all of this dark Brandon merch that they're selling. But that tweet in particular was posted at 11:18 a.m. Thursday. And Trump's big court appearance, that took place roughly 5 hours later. So while Joe Biden has not publicly talked about this, he's not willingly bringing it up or anything, they're saying that's him campaigning on it. And so for that reason, Donald Trump should not be stopped from talking about it. So we turn now to you, our justice. How do you rule on this? What do you think about the case they're making?
Well, I mean, the evidence to me is not logically relevant, right? Because it doesn't coincide with what they're trying to argue. If he posts this at 11:15 a.m., there's no reference to Trump, there's no reference to the case whatsoever, right? Dark Brandon is a theme that has been running heavy for quite some time. I allude to Dark Brandon in my own commentary most times. So unfortunately, I just don't see the relevance of this evidence when it comes to speaking about Trump. I think it is very much so about him campaigning for 2024, and I think we all will enjoy our cup of Joe early in the morning. So,
I will say I prefer mine with a lot of flavor. Basically, I prefer frou-frou flavored coffee, but I guess I can still put it in the mug. Okay, so you're ruling that he is innocent of these charges.
I'm gonna say that Joe Biden is innocent of these charges.
Exactly. You might be able to later charge Dark Brandon with them. I don't know if that's like a double jeopardy type thing, but.
Well, those are two different defendants.
They are clearly, look at the eyes. I will say that I was a little bit torn about this. It is pretty close to when Trump is in court. It could be seen as him gloating about the legal difficulties of his longtime rival, Donald Trump. But look, as you say, it does not specifically reference it. And they filmed this video earlier. They've rolled out the merch over the course of a week. Is this that dissimilar from posting the website or any other tweets where they show the t-shirts and things? I am sympathetic to the idea that this is sticking it to Trump a little bit, but I think that the campaign has produced enough ambiguity that I am not willing to adjudicate him as guilty. So I will join you, Dark Brandon and Joe Biden, either or, innocent. But I am curious what the audience thinks. Are we being too easy? Are we in a bubble? Okay, let us know in the chat. But anyway, thank you for playing along, AB. That was fun. Okay, with that said, why don't we turn to something significantly more serious, although staying in the legal realm. A federal judge has thrown out a counter-defamation lawsuit that was filed by Donald Trump against writer E. Jean Carroll, who, as you're probably aware, recently won her sexual abuse suit against him earlier this year. She will be you know, apparently, you know, appeals notwithstanding, getting millions of dollars from Donald Trump. Well, he has continued to deny his wrongdoing, even following him being found guilty. And he's appealing the $5 million verdict. At one point, he was asking for $10 million from her. So anyway, he says that the reason he could do a counter-defamation lawsuit is after the guilty, you know, the result of the case, she went out in public and said that he had raped her, even though the jury did not find him specifically legally liable for actually having raped her. They just found that he had sexually abused her. Well, Lewis Kaplan is the US district judge, and just yesterday said that the jury did find Trump liable for sexually abusing Carol. And the details of that finding show that her having maintained that Trump raped her colloquially is substantially true. The judge noted that the definition of rape he'd given the jury was the quote, narrow technical meaning of that term specific to New York law, which defines rape as forcible penetration with the penis. The judge said the sexual abuse finding shows the jury believed Trump forcibly penetrated Carol with his fingers. The verdict establishes as against Mr. Trump the fact that he raped her, albeit digitally rather than with his penis. Thus, it establishes against him the substantial truth of Miss Carol's rape allegations. So his counter-defamation lawsuit has been found to not have standing because what she has said is not defamation, because it is true, at least according to this US district judge. It's an interesting little wrinkle, AB. What do you make of it?
Yeah, so I would say that's an interesting one, right? And that's a part of legal education that becomes complicated because there can be different definitions of things. But I also think like part of defamation is proving damages and proving that you were harmed in whatever that person said, whether it be your reputation, right? Especially when you are a known person in the media, there are extra elements you have to meet for that. And I think in this particular case, he doesn't meet all the elements. And what damages have you suffered? Because you still get money from your followers and supporters to help you with your campaign, and you are still the front runner. And so I don't see where your reputation has taken a hit at this point, although it should. And so with that being said, under those elements, I do think that you don't have a counter suit for defamation at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that is such a fascinating situation we're in, where there's like two levels to it. So it would seem difficult for his reputation to be able to be hurt, because anybody who cares about his history of sexual harassment and abuse already knows about it. And honestly, he brags about all of the indictments and the charges and all that. So he seems to believe it's actually helping him. And, you know, his counter-defamation lawsuit had to do with a comment that she made the day after the lawsuit was finalized. But that same day, he went on a town hall and bragged about the case himself. So clearly, he didn't think that public conversation about it was going to hurt him. So anyway, he's just such a unique person to be involved in a case like this, where both as a philosophical matter, but also likely realistically, it does not actually hurt him that he is found to have sexually abused this woman. It seems utterly irrelevant among his fan base, which sucks, by the way.
I mean, when you're talking about somebody who's going to be, or who could potentially be the next president of the United States of America again, unfortunately, that's a dangerous position to be in. But let's not forget the grab them by the punani comments, right? So, I mean, and all those things, in defamation, you have to prove that the allegations are not true. Truth is a defense to a defamation. So if what she said was true, in the least bit, even if she lied, for example, right? Because we have been confirmed that lying is your First Amendment right, right? But even if you feel like she lied, where were you harmed is my issue. And if you can't show harm from that, then at this point, like, just let it go. You're being petty. Yeah.
Well, they will, if the choices you're giving them are let it go or be petty, well, they've already chosen. They've chosen pettiness. So Alina Haba, Trump's attorney, who again, I believe does real estate law, but is for some reason involved in questions of overturning the results of an election and sexual assault. Okay, says we strongly disagree with the flawed decision and will be filing an appeal shortly, which I have no doubt that they will do. E. Jean Carroll was very courageous for being willing to have this relitigated in public, and might have to wait literally years if she ever gets that money, but we will see. Anyway, I want to turn to just one more related topic before we close this thing out. There was a hypothesis when the indictments against Donald Trump started to roll in that it might not be the best for public attention to what's going on that there are so many against him, or that the most significant ones did not come first. So they're all serious, obviously, but you know, when he's being indicted for things having to do with hush money payments and then classified documents, and you also have the E. Jean Carroll thing, and we're waiting for Fulton County, and only then is he actually indicted for attempting to overthrow American democracy. What if that resulted in less people paying attention? Well, we don't have, you know, we can't say for sure, but the data appears to show that there might have been something to that. So here are the Google trends for Donald Trump and indictment. And you can see a correlation between these two in Google searches around these topics. And that big spike in the middle, that is the first indictment being unsealed against Trump. That is the hush money case involving Stormy Daniels, which is serious. It's a violation of campaign finance laws. He definitely did it, allegedly. And you can see a lot of interest there. But then like the classified documents had quite a bit less searching, and we're not done yet with this spike for January 6th, but it looks like it's probably going to cap out lower than the classified documents, even though I think objectively it's the most serious set of charges against him. So it seems like there might have been something to that. And you know, what the public thinks about this, how much they're paying attention, is not the most important thing. But AB, what do you think about this? Was this a series of missteps to have it rolled out in the way that it was? Or does it not matter?
I don't think it matters. I think either way, it could have been spun as a political strategy, right? Because even if you hit them with the most egregious charges first, which as you mentioned, they're all terrible. But even if you hit them with that first and then slowly like waned in on the smaller charges, so to say, I think they would have spun it either way. So the reality is like, the rule of law is the rule of law. Procedure is procedure, and procedure has been followed for each of these counties by each of these prosecutors, and it just is what it is. I think that the layperson doesn't necessarily understand criminal law outside of Law and Order or Judge Judy, right? So regardless, keeping their attention, or excuse me, keeping the attention of the layperson in issues like this is going to be hard. So at the end of the day, it was going to be what it was going to be, in my opinion, yeah. Regardless.
I have to say, to speak up in defense of the American people, I think that your charge that they only understand it from Law and Order and Judge Judy is not fair. Suits and The Lincoln Lawyer are like two of the most popular shows on Netflix. So they have a broader base of knowledge than you might know.
No, you're anyway. Right, you're right. Those are the two that came to my mind first. I apologize. I stand corrected.
Okay, just to be fair.
I am a Suits fan.
You're a what fan?
I'm a Suits fan.
Yeah,
I'm in law school. No, just kidding.
That's funny. I've been watching it. We're on like the third season. I'm thinking, should I have gone to law school? Is it too late? I'm pretty old. But anyway, I am enjoying it. I'd never watched it before it was on Netflix. But I think there's this Meghan Markle woman. I don't know if anyone's familiar with her, but she's compelling. Anyway, I'm just gonna briefly say, like, it is one thing to speculate, to hypothesize that maybe we could have ordered these things differently. But like, how is that exactly supposed to work? Like, is Alvin Bragg supposed to be like, well, you know, I think I have a slam dunk case and I have an ethical obligation to do this, but I don't want to be trouble. Like, why should he have to wait? How about this? Merrick Garland, Jack Smith, get your S together and do the case earlier if you think that the order of, you know, operations is so significant. It's really on you. Fannie Willis doesn't work for Jack Smith. Like, she does her job. She has an obligation to her constituents. So anyway, I think it's interesting to speculate like the possible realities we could be in. But I think everyone is trying to pursue justice in a complex situation where, as AB said, it's all gonna be spun anyway. Steven Crowder apparently sent fairly harsh NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, to his staff as a result of the critical journalism that's been coming out about some of the allegations against him. He was trying to lock it down, stop people from leaking information, stop talking to your former coworkers. But as bad as that probably sounds, and I think it sounds bad, the details are actually worse. So Mediaite published this follow-up report to initial reporting about what happened at the right-wing pundits' offices. And just 2 hours after that was published, CEO Gerald Morgan told staffers they could no longer communicate with former employees. NDAs were sent out later, but I guess it was informal before they tried to get people to sign things. So those agreements have been reviewed by Mediaite as well. They were sent on July 26th, so just a couple of weeks ago. And they read in part, employee maintains its promises and covenants not to disclose confidential information as defined in the amendment. Blah, 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 you can't do all this stuff. So, you know, like locking down your employees so they can't talk to people who used to work there is, I feel like that's saying more about what they might say than about them. But anyway, that's not all. It also says that if you breach this NDA, you will have to pay the company liquidated damages in the amount of $100,000. And also, you have to agree that that insane amount, you have to say, I hereby acknowledge that said damages are reasonable, do not constitute a penalty, and I further agree that I will not contest the reasonableness of said liquidated damages in any such action, blah, 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 blah. So look, I think that the amount seems unreasonable. I would say based on all those stipulations, they understand that it's unreasonable. You would not have to have keep asserting that it's reasonable if it was. You know, the king doesn't need to tell you that he's king, so to speak. But anyway, they were told they had to sign it by that Friday. And that was not the end of it. Crowder decided to personally address his employees, and that's where it's going to get worse. But first, AB, what do you make of the NDAs? Look, I've never had to sign one, but maybe they're more common in these sorts of situations than I know.
I mean, I've signed NDAs. I've also had to have employees sign NDAs. And normally you do it in the beginning of employment before that person comes on so that they're aware that there's just certain things that should not be said. But when you're doing it, when you already have an employee and then you're forcing employees to sign them under duress by a certain deadline, then that's when it becomes unconscionable. Like, then now it's like, okay, what's really going on here? Do I need a lawyer to come review this for me? So in this particular instance, I will go get a lawyer and make sure, you know, that the stipulations and needs are valid. But $100,000 for talking to someone and you're not saying specifically like what should not be discussed or why it shouldn't be discussed. You're just telling someone you're gonna punish them for discussing certain information or just discussing things in general. Sounds very vague and it just sounds unconscionable. And like I said, it sounds like they're being forced under duress, which would make it invalid at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. We'll see how this gets adjudicated. As you will all find out, several people decided not to sign it. But here's what one person said about Steven Crowder having this July 27th meeting where he was warning people to not speak out. By the way, note that he's not saying don't lie about us. He's just saying don't tell what actually happened. Keep doing it. I'm gonna keep saying this stuff. You don't get to tell people about it, which is just fascinating. But the source says Stephen was livid. Really? He seems even keeled. He and Gerald Morgan said they knew someone was talking to you. That's the author of the Mediaite piece based on the article you wrote. They said whoever text messages former employees about us not being able to hang out with them would be given amnesty if we confessed by 2 p.m. If no one confessed, then they would see it as malice. No one confessed, so they started interrogating a few people. So you're not even allowed to tell the former employees that you can't talk to them anymore. You have to ghost them, okay, protecting Steven Crowder and his company at the expense of your relationship with your friends, and you can't even tell them why you're doing that, even before you've signed the NDA, by the way. So then it gets worse. So during this meeting, he downplays the sexual misconduct allegations made against him, which we will remind you of later. But he says, according to the source, quote, if you're not okay with guys playing sack tap, then this isn't the place for you. And let me just say, oh God. As I said in my production meeting, if he had not done any of the other stuff that had been, you know, alleged against him, that would be sexual misconduct. Making Like, making that sort of statement to your employees just seems unacceptable. Anyway, a source said that after the interrogation of the staffers, four employees decided to just walk. One source close to Crowder said, "Crowder was intimidating. Stephen's increasing justification of his workplace sexual behavior between men makes a lot of male employees uncomfortable. He always says it's joking, but it doesn't seem like a joke to anyone anymore," which is probably part of why several people decided to leave. AB, what are your thoughts?
That's disgusting, first and foremost. But second of all, it just sounds like you're trying to protect yourself from legal liability. And it's not gonna work. I mean, just even the whole NDA portion of it is giving like guilty before you even get found guilty. And it's kind of scary. But you can't stop people from talking, right? You can't stop people from talking to their friends as long as they are not sharing information that majority of us would assume should be kept confidential. I don't see what the issue is at this point. And yeah, those employees, y'all need to go get lawyers, because that don't sound right.
Yeah.
None of it. And what happened to the sexual harassment training? Like, normally when you start a job, there's some sort of sexual harassment training in the beginning, just so you know kind of your boundaries and what you're allowed to say and do and to respect people's personal space. But if you still work in there.
I mean, what it seems like is that there was some sexual harassment training, but it was training in how to sexually harass. That's what it seems like.
It was training, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, by the way, this is not on the employees. Employees should have the right to be able to work for even people who seem horrible without being abused. As an objective observer, though, just in terms of his behavior, is anyone surprised by literally any of this? That seems like his entire character. Like, even setting aside, you know, I know that people are making allegations that, like, one of the former employees says that he's grooming employers as a case to be made. I don't need for any of that to be true or whatever. Like, this doesn't have to be like a thing of sexual orientation or whatever. You can't touch the testicles of your employees, just as a general rule. There are other venues where you can do that if that's what you want to do. You can't do that with your employees. I should not need to point this out to you. You're a full grown man who, by the way, was writing like op-eds for Fox News about waiting for marriage and the sanctity of all this. You apparently don't think other men's testicles are all that sanctified. You think that they're just for fun and games in the office, allegedly. That no one deserves to work in a place like that. And then to legally threaten them because they have a problem with your insanely toxic juvenile behavior is pathetic. And I will close by saying, you remember last week when he put together this little ad for something big coming, and he put like a video of all like leftists criticizing him, even put video of me. I didn't respond at the time because I generally don't care what he does. That was after this. Methinks maybe he did that to get ahead of the fact that all this bad news is gonna be coming out. Bad news on top of bad news on top of bad news. Just cut him loose. He was never talented anyway. Who actually cares if he remains in this field? Any final thoughts, AB, before we move on?
I feel bad for those employees, if I'm being honest. And I hope that he gets sued really quickly, because that's just not acceptable. I mean, you should feel safe in your workplace, right? And it's not to say, I'm not saying that the employee should be blamed here at all whatsoever. What I'm saying is that you should be able to work in a safe place, safe space. And I think that even the people who are above him or even allowing this to continue, like, y'all should be vicariously liable too for his behavior.
Yeah.
Because people just should not feel like they have to go to work in a space where they're being sexually assaulted or otherwise being deemed to be bad people because they don't agree to be sexually assaulted. Like, what kind of world are we living in if that is the case?
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna remind everyone of the actual allegations. They're out there if you wanna know all of the insane things that he did. I will just close with this. One of the other, I guess, straws that broke the camel's back is in the very recent past, Michael Spadone, a former field director at Project Veritas, who was accused of kissing and groping a former colleague in a since-said lawsuit, has been brought on to the Louder with Crowder team to replace someone else. So they brought on a person with a history of lawsuits involving sexual harassment and assault, showing that they care a lot about what's been going on. Anyway, this is who they are. They've been very clear. Not all the employees, they're not responsible for what the figureheads do. But the man at the top, this was always his brand. So nobody could be surprised, him least of all. Illinois is going to soon outlaw advertising firearms specifically to appeal to children, as well as to individuals that are determined to produce a public safety threat. So basically, you're not allowed to try to sell guns by appealing to kids or militants effectively. Now, many of you might think, why would this need to be a law? Well, welcome to America, because this is what many gun companies do to sell more weapons. In this case, if they do it, they could draw a $50,000 fine. And I really hope that that's more money that they could make from selling to the kids and the militants, but I guess we'll see. Anyway, the Attorney General of Illinois says, we've gone after the marketing that has historically driven up the consumption by minors for those products that are harmful to them. Firearms industry shouldn't be immune to the standards that we put on other industries. There are plenty of things that you cannot advertise to kids, by the way, I'll just point that out. But specifically, they focused on the JR-15, a smaller, lighter version of the AR-15, advertised with a tagline, get them one like yours. The maker said it's deliberately made smaller with added safety features to fit younger shooters as they learn from adults how to safely maneuver such a weapon. Side note, here's an idea, put the safety measures on the adult ones too. Seems like a good idea. Anyway, you can see here a little ad for the JR-15 that is, I'm gonna say a 5-year-old maybe that is firing that JR-15. And then you can see this ad for the We1 Tactical. We bring that up. That's intended to appeal to 45-year-old men, right? That iconography, I assume that's probably what it is. Anyway, they're not happy about it. AP, you'll be surprised to find out this new law, but it is interesting that Illinois is moving in this direction. What are your thoughts?
Of course, they're not happy about it. And I don't think that this fine is enough money, right? If you're going to punish someone and be punitive, like make it count, okay? Make sure that they're going to make money off this, right? The people who love their guns, regardless of what we're going through right now in this nation when it comes to guns, especially these assault rifles, they're going to still purchase. And we know that these gun makers and the people who sell guns are making millions, if not billions of dollars off the sales of these weapons. And so I think that if you're going to add some sort of punishment to make sure that people are being, I would say, reasonable, these companies are being reasonable and logical in who they are appealing to, then make it count. And to me, it just doesn't count. So,
yeah. Look, I think, you know, like desperately trying to get kids to use a version of a gun that is uniquely popular amongst domestic terrorists is weird. I would say that if you're part of the advertising teams on this, you know, if you've ever wondered how the tobacco industry was able to do it and sleep at night for all those decades, well, you know, glass houses and all that, glass assault rifles. But I will also say, you know, they were pretty openly trying to appeal to broken men as well with their advertisements. We covered it, you know, a couple months ago in a deep dive on the history of the AR-15, but very specifically trying to appeal to people who have fantasies of lashing out or feeling like a man by having this big gun. There's a lot of issues here, and it's good to see at least some states taking it seriously. Not just Illinois, by the way, but New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Washington, California, Hawaii, and Colorado have different sorts of plans that are sort of in a similar area. So you are seeing it begin to spread. Any final thoughts, AB, before we move to break?
Yeah, I mean, I think that on a positive note, right, the good thing is that there are things being put in place to help try to control what we're seeing with these weapons, right, especially assault weapons. And it's sad that like we're appealing it to children. I have a 5-year-old. There's no way in heck that I would allow my 5-year-old to hold any sort of weapon because I just know what 5-year-olds do and how they think, right? And I don't live in a space where I need to raise my child to be dealing with weapons in that manner. But I do think it's good that we are seeing restrictions put in place that are not necessarily infringing on people's Second Amendment rights, right? Because that is like the big argument when it comes to this. But I think as a nation, we need to be more responsible in how we are handling the sale of guns. In all actuality, we've seen way too many reckless shootings and too many people die within this year alone due to assault rifles. And so if we're gonna take into account like lives and children and say that children matter and we are pro-life and we wanna protect children, I think this counts in that realm as well.
100%. And I know you had a 5-year-old, that's adorable.
Okay. Yes.
Federal appeals court judge earlier this week halted a rule from the Joe Biden administration that was going to make it easier for some student debt possessors who receive that debt as a result of going to universities that are found to have sort of deceived the students about a variety of things involving their earning potential, those sorts of things. Now they will not be able to, at least for now, have that debt relieved. So here is what the rule said. Basically, it broadened existing policy, ending the debt of students who borrowed money to attend colleges or universities that are determined to have misled them on matters such as whether their courses would actually prepare them for employment in their field or the likely salary that they would earn upon obtaining a degree. So you might exaggerate those things to get people to sign up for a for-profit college, but then the students could end up with a lot of debt and not an easy ability to pay it off. So it sort of makes sense philosophically. Those are people who you'd prioritize for student debt cancellation. Well, Career Colleges and Schools of Texas, which is an association of for-profit higher learning institutions, filed a lawsuit against this rule earlier this year in February. Among its complaints was that the rules are so broad that they cover even unintentional actions by a college. So they appear to accept that some of these are intentional, but no, you're also catching the unintentional parts. They said that the rule unconstitutionally gives an executive branch agency, the Departments of Education, what amounts to the power of a court in deciding whether to grant claims for debt relief, which is an interesting argument to make, but I don't know, like the IRS agents, some of them can make decisions about who qualifies for different things. That's sort of relief. I feel like this you'd have to prove in court, but anyway, AB, we cannot be surprised that there's gonna be pushback by the very institutions that are being found to have, you know, lied to students to get them to pay money. What do you make about this?
It sounds like y'all misled them with fraud, right? You fraudulently induced these people to sign up for these schools under the guise that they would have these certain opportunities knowing you could not deliver or that that necessarily wasn't the case. And so either you can allow their debt to be forgiven or where are the attorneys with the class action lawsuits, which I would assume would be more harmful in that sense, right? As opposed to just forgiving the debt, y'all could just get sued and then ultimately get shut down and it's probably gonna be worse.
Yeah, yeah, in theory. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if those cases existed. But I would also say this is a case where, yeah, imagine if we had like public, like available public 4-year college, trade school, those sorts of things. Like if you could do that sort of thing without having to pay, we could avoid quite a bit of this as well. Like a lot of some of these institutions might still exist and they might be specialized programs or something like that. But a lot of people, I think, can reach a point where they feel very desperate. The traditional college is so expensive or you don't have the qualifications for it that they will turn to these sorts of things. And I'm not saying that there's no place necessarily for for-profit, you know, higher learning institutions. But obviously they're tapping into both a genuine need and also a fear that people have that they're being economically left behind. So I would say that's another reason why we should turn to public colleges and universities. In any event, we also know, and it's for the stakes of this, that people who go to these sorts of universities have a disproportionately likely to have debt, and the amount of debt that they have is disproportionate to people who go to traditional universities. So something to be worried about. It's been, you know, temporarily blocked. It will of course be appealed. This might be the sort of thing, AB, where, you know, the Supreme Court has done some really reprehensible stuff over the past few years across a number of different issue areas, including education, by the way. They have occasionally though done things that seem sort of reasonable. It's impossible to predict how they'll weigh on this, but I guess that's where it could end up.
If it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, right? If that's something that the Supreme Court has the choice of whether or not they want to touch this, because they've already touched on the first using the HEROES Act, right, to forgive student loans. But this is a different issue. So it may or may not even reach the Supreme Court, to be honest with you. But again, if there is evidence that you induced these students with fraud, right, that is the biggest thing, especially considering this is a corporation. That is not the type of reputation any corporation wants to have, is that you are using fraud to get people to do business with you. Like, that just goes against the laws of business, essentially. And so I am hoping that there is a reasonable judge out there before this even gets to the Supreme Court that will say, like, no, you guys did wrong and you need to go ahead and allow, you know, these students' debt to be forgiven. And then also, I think we should look at how many of these schools are still active, because if they are no longer active, right, if they have ceased in business, for example, then what are they still paying on these loans for?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great point. We're gonna turn to a slightly different angle on this. We know that for many Americans who are burdened with student loan debt, payments are about to begin again. We've had this extended period thanks to the pandemic where thankfully people did not have to pay. Now, of course, they also thought for, you know, briefly that they were gonna have their student debt canceled, and that unfortunately is currently being blocked. But in advance of the repayments, there are vultures circling. So student loan companies are encouraging federal borrowers to refinance before that happens. And they're, you know, making all these claims about how you can lock in lower payments before you have to start repaying. But if you do that, it could come at a cost that you might have to dig into the fine print to actually know about. So consider this your warning. Many of the federal programs to help borrowers out are not available if a borrower's loans are held by a private lender, as would happen if they took up one of these offers. So look, many people will have a mix of public and private loans, but the refinancing is designed to take either your established private loans you already have or the public ones and repackage them as private loans, which would lock you out of these programs. And some might make the case that that's like the whole reason they're doing it. But here is how it works in practice. SoFi sent letters to borrowers last month with a header reading, "Federal student loan forbearance is ending soon. Don't miss out on savings. Start planning your refi today." And that's great, you know, in the headline, the big text. If you go to the fine print, though, it says if you're a qualifying federal student loan borrower, you should still consider President Biden's plan to erase some or all of your student loan debt before refinancing. However, you should also take time now to prepare for your payments to restart, including the opportunity to refinance your student loan debt at a lower APR or to extend your term to achieve a lower monthly payment. Earnest is another student loan refinancer. They also have a thing on their FAQ, on their website, that borrowers who refinance federal student loans should be aware of the repayment options that they are giving up. For example, Earnest does not offer income-based repayment plans, a save plan that we've been talking about from Joe Biden. So it's not that they're not acknowledging it. They're legally required, I'm sure, in the fine print, but that's not what the leading message is. And a lot of people, this is not hypothetical, some people already are now finding they're no longer able to do these sorts of things through, you know, no intentional fault of their own. AB, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll just say I had the honor of sitting in a meeting with White House representatives where we discussed the student loan repayment programs. And unfortunately, I didn't have time to pull up my notes specifically for this segment. But I do remember them specifically saying for us to get the message out that do not refinance and do not listen to these companies that are coming to you with that, because there are going to be other options that are available that are more beneficial to you to be able to help with repayment. And also, although private loans and federal loans are different, right? They do differ. There will still be options to help students repay these loans. And also, if you have federal loans, for example, even if you're unable to make your payments right now, there is still like this ramp program that they have that will allow you to kind of get on track without being penalized in the way that you would normally be penalized for not paying your student loans back in a reasonable time, right? So just hold out and be patient. But understand that, like, the loans in general are predatory, period. So keep that at the forefront, right? Of that, if there's a loan company calling you, it's probably predatory. Do your research first.
There's a good chance. There's definitely a good chance. Well, look, you know, we need to restart the whole process of trying to have it legalized in some other fashion. I would also say I'm not an expert on this. Don't listen to me. Look it up yourself. But with all that they've had, they've jacked up interest rates to try to get inflation under control. How much lower could the APR possibly be? It's likely higher at this point, but Anyway, that's just my guess. I don't know. And that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. So thank you to those of you on the linear platforms or listening on the podcast. If you are listening on the podcast, consider giving us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Helps out, helps spread the message, and I always enjoy reading those. For the rest of you, there's more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. AB and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.